Okay, Boker Tov, everybody. Sheets, there are some over here. I'll bring you some over. Okay. There are still sheets going around. If people have them, that's great. Boker Tov to everybody. Thank you all for braving the cold weather to come. I woke up this morning to a very wintry landscape, icy and snowy, and it didn't feel like Israel, but it was lovely anyway.
How is the driving?
It's fine. I grew up in the north of England. I'm used to driving in bad weather. There's never any good weather there. The Parsha, of course, this week is Parshat Yitro. And we come into the world of the Aseret HaDibros, into the Ten Commandments. And I would like to look today at an issue of Geneva. Now, a theft. There are many types of Geneva. There are many types of theft. We have already looked at one of them in a previous year, which is Genevat Da'at. If you remember from our discussion about representing yourself to people in a way which is untrue, which is misleading, etc. So Genevat Da'at is one kind of Geneva. There's also Genevat Mamon, obviously, stealing people's money. The Geneva actually, technically, in the Ten Commandments in the Aseret HaDibros is kidnapping. It's Geneva of people. Chazal learned that out from the context of all of those mitzvot in the Bein Adam Lechaveros at the end of the Aseret HaDibros. They're all capital offenses, and the Chazal ask which is the Geneva, which is a capital offense in Halacha, and they say that's kidnapping. But I'd like to talk about a different Geneva today, which is an issue of intellectual property and copyrights and patents. What do we have to say about that? Is there a halachic concept of such things? Is there a way that you can prevent people from stealing your publications, copying your works, copying tapes and CDs? People ask this question a lot. I get asked by girls who are going to buy music, can my friend and I each put in $10, buy a $20 CD, and then we'll copy it, and we'll both have a copy. People sometimes want to copy music and put it in their car, or have one in the kitchen and one in the lounge. Is that a problem? There's any number of questions coming up on downloading things from the internet. Stuff is put in up on the internet illegally. Some stuff is there legally. Which law is even involved in determining what is legal and what is illegal? We're going to have to deal with some of those issues, and hopefully it will be clearer as we go through. So that's what I wish to deal with today. It's only going to be a survey of the literature, and not all of it anyway, but we're going to look at some interesting cases that have come up over the years and how they've been dealt with. Let's start, if you like, with the problem of intellectual property in Halacha. The Rambam says in Hilchos Geneva number one as follows. Hagoneid b'rishus habalim. If somebody breaks into a house, a thief, a ganav, breaks into a house and steals in that house. Since the property that he's stealing is still in the house, he's in the house, and the property is still in the house, and the police arrive and catch him red-handed, okay? Patur mina kefel. He is exempted from kefel. What is kefel? We'll see that's very important. If a ganav is caught and didn't accept or admit to having done the ganav and is found to be guilty of theft, he has to pay back, according to the Torah, double. That's called kefel. He has to pay back double the value of that which he stole. But if it's still in the house of the person that owned it, he's exempt. V'chein im tavach u'machor, or what if he stole an animal, and he shechted the animal, he killed the animal, or sold the animal, for which the Torah mandates dalet v'hei, either four times the amount for an ox, and five times for a sheep. The other way around, sorry, four times for a sheep and five times for an ox. Then, again, patur. Shambur Shusan, if he's there in the house, patur. If he did it all in the house, he's exempted from all of these extra penalties. Why? We'll see in a minute. The imhigbiya haganeva, but if the ganav picked up inside the house the thing that he was about to steal before he managed to get it out, nitchayav. Then he's chayav. For all of those things. Mishum ganav, then he's a ganav. Afa pisha adain lohotiyum rishus habalim. Even though he didn't yet manage to get it out of the house, once he picks it up, he is liable for all these things, but before he picks it up, if it was still in the house of the owner, he's not liable for any of these extra things. Because he didn't steal yet. He's there in the house, he broke in, maybe there's breaking and entering, but he didn't yet steal anything. Why not? So it's number two explains. Mase gzeila, because when we talk about theft, the act of theft, shayach rak b'dvar sheyesh bo mamash. There has to be some thing worth something, some physical thing. Sha'ash shayach bo kinyan gzeila. There has to be a kinyan gzeila. And this idea of a kinyan is very important. The Rambam is passing in number one that unless the ganav makes a kinyan, just like a purchaser has to make a kinyan on an item, and a kinyan is a halachic act of symbolic ownership. It's not just good enough to pay the money. You have to either do hagva'ah, pick it up, or mashicha, or drag it along, or masira, or push it along, all these different kinds of acts of a kinyan. So too a ganav, in order to be a halachic ganav, you have to make a kinyan. And if the ganav never made a kinyan, he's not yet a ganav. Obviously, he's not innocent, but you can't make him pay the extra penalties. So too, we see that a kinyan can only be made on something which is material. You can't make a kinyan in thin air. So the problem now is, for us, with intellectual property, how do I assert ownership over something which doesn't exist except in a completely abstract way? I printed a book. And I drew a picture, whatever it is. And it was printed and it was distributed. And somebody else copies that. That's nice. Is that going to be the whole time, do you think? Is that happening in our building? Is that happening in our building or is it upstairs? Okay, I mean, I feel bad for them. They have to do the work as well. They can't not do it. Is Rashir after me? So maybe they could delay another 45 minutes, we'll see. Thank you very much for asking. So if somebody copies my idea, so they didn't steal the book, they didn't steal the item that I produced, they just stole the idea. Can they make a kinyan on an idea? Can I make a kinyan on an idea? Can they steal it from me? That is the problem that we have. And when these things first started becoming an issue, when publishing was invented in the 1400s, in the 15th century, it wasn't long before people started raising this question with the Rabbanim and asking Shilas. And the first way that they dealt with this was as follows. The basic assumption is no, you can't make a kinyan on an abstract idea. It's not possible. And therefore, how are we going to protect people's intellectual property rights? The first way they did this was what's called cheirem. Now, everybody knows what a cheirem is. If you haven't been put in cheirem, then obviously you didn't do anything interesting in life. But not just a joke. But there were cheirems on other things than just people. So the first example of this was as follows. Though in the 1550s, Rav Meir Captain Ellenbogen, I don't know how that's related to the street in Harnov, but Rav Meir Captain Ellenbogen, also called the Maram Padua, he published a new copy of the Rambam's Mishnah Torah in partnership with a non-Jewish publisher. They went out and they made a new Mishnah Torah. He invested time and effort and money, etc. But then a non-Jewish rival publisher called Mark Antonio Justinian decided to print another edition and price it lower in order to undercut the Maram Padua's publication. And all of that effort and all of that time and all of that investment was coming to nothing. The Maram asked the Ramah for a psak, and the Ramah answer was the following. He declared a cheirem on anyone buying the Justinian edition and said that until all the copies of the Maram Padua's book had been sold and he'd made his expected profit, nobody else under power of cheirem was allowed to assist in the rival publisher or to buy the copies of the book. And that's one of the reasons why haskamot were included at the beginning of Svarim. The haskamah is not just to say I read this book and it's recommended, and in fact if you read the haskamot they rarely do say I read this book and it's recommended. They usually say my son-in-law had a chavrusa who knew this fellow once 20 years ago in Lakewood and he was a thoroughly good fellow. And therefore, probably what he writes is great. Sometimes it says more than that. It's not unusual that people bring out foreign news for him with haskamot from Rabbanim that passed away 20, 30 years ago. That's also possible. You need to just look out for that. They're not trying to swindle anybody. It's just that they wrote a book 20 years ago, which was Yehad the Haskamah, and today maybe they wouldn't get such a Haskamah, but that's just something to think about. Always good to read the haskamot. There's a Meister of the Chofetz Chaim Sefer. The Chofetz Chaim wrote the Sefer Tzviras Shmiras Haloshen, so he sent the Sefer to Rav Yisrael Salanta for a Haskama. So who better than Rav Yisrael Salanta to give me a Haskama? And Rav Yisrael Salanta wrote back and said, I'm not giving you a Haskama. He says, what's wrong? Don't you like the book? He said, the book's fantastic. He says, but so why wouldn't you give me a Haskama? So he says, because I disagree with one halacha in the book. One halacha. And he says, what's the halacha? So he says, you write in Shmiras Haloshen, if you spoke Lashon Hara about somebody and didn't tell them, or they didn't know, they never found out. And they never suffered. They never suffered any loss. And they're completely oblivious. You write, the Chofetz Chaim writes in his book, that you have to go to them when you want to do tshuva and say to them, excuse me, you don't know this, but I spoke Lashon Hara about you, I'm really sorry about it, and I ask you to forgive me. So Rabbi Yisrael Salanta said, what did you achieve by that? I understand if the guy lost out and he knows somebody slandered him, he lost a job or he lost, and he wants to know who is it that's doing this to me, then for sure you need to approach them and say, I apologize, it was me, please forgive me. But if they never knew and they never found out, what are you achieving by letting them know, oh, you didn't know this, but I've been speaking Lashon Hara about you for the last year and I'm really sorry. You're just making it worse. So the Chofetz Chaim said, I understand, I don't agree with you, but why don't you write in your Haskama, I agree with everything in the book apart from this one thing. So he said, nobody reads the Haskama. So he said, they'll just see my name, Rav Yisrael Salanta, and assume I agree with everything in the book. So he never gave him a Haskama, and we rested at that. The other interesting Haskama story I once heard is the Chasam Sofer was sent a book, we'll see the Chasam Sofer later, sent a Sefer for a Haskama, and the Chasam Sofer read the book, and he thought the book was pretty, you know, unhelpful, and really shouldn't have been written, there was nothing helpful in it at all. And he wrote back a letter to the guy and said, I read your book, there is a heter to write down Torah Shebaal Peh, only if it's of some use to the general public. I don't think anything in your book adds in any way to the corpus of Jewish knowledge, therefore I hold it awesome to have written it. So the guy said, thank you very much, he printed the book with the letter in front with Chasam Sofer's name on it, because nobody reads the Haskama. So you know, you may as well. Which is his opinion. So one of the reasons for Haskamas is the Cheirem, that the Haskama used to include a statement saying this book is published by such and such a person. Nobody else may buy rival publications or assist in rival publications for up to 25 years sometimes. And that was the way, if you like, Takanos HaShuk, to control the market to make that work. So that was one way that Cheirem worked. But Cheirem only works if people listen to the Cheirem. That's one of the reasons why Cheirem is so ineffectual today in many ways, because people just go down the road and go to another community where they will ignore the Cheirem. Only in small communities where the Rav is in control, somewhere like Gateshead, somewhere like that, where everything happens with the Haskama of the Rav, then you can talk about a meaningful Cheirem. So as the Jewish community got bigger and more cosmopolitan, the Cheirem started having less and less effect, and we'll see soon what other things were suggested. So that's the first suggestion. The second one is something called Hasagat Gvul, moving a boundary fence. What does it mean to move a boundary fence? So let's have a look at the Pesukim here, number 3. Lo Sasi Gvul Re'echa, do not move the boundary of your friend. Asher Gavlu Rishonim, which originally was put there, B'Nachal Ascha, in your inheritance. Asher Tilchal Ba'aretz, Asher Hashem Lokecha Noisin Nachal Rishonim. Don't move a boundary. But then there's a repetition of that mitzvah in the Brachas and the Klal, it's in number 4. Arur, Masig Gvul Re'ehu, Fa'ama Kola'am Amein. Arur, what's this Arur Masig Gvul Re'ehu? So why is this repeated? So the Meforshim understand that one of the Hasagat Gvul Isurim is for the physical. Don't go out in the middle of the night, move the fence 3 feet to the other side of the boundary so that you get more land. Yes, that's clearly Asur. But there is another Hasagat Gvul. There is a conceptual Hasagat Gvul that is somebody, if you like, has got an economic boundary, an economic area which they've invested in. You can't impinge on their Gvul. You can't change that boundary in a way which affects their livelihood. And that's understood in the Gemara in number 5 in Bava Basra. We get to learn a lot of Gemara today, which is good. Amar Rav Huna. Hai bar mavoa. If there's a bar mavoa, now a mavoi is small. It's a small area. The oichi recha, and he has a mill where he grinds wheat. The asa bar mavoa chavre, and another person in the mavoi, in the little alleyway, whatever. Ukamoiki gabe establishes a rival mill. A little cottage industry. Dinahu duma aki vilo. He can stop him. He can go to Beis Din and say, hey, this is my patch. This is my mavui. You go and open up in some other marvel. You can't impinge on my livelihood. The Amalek can say to him, you're taking away my livelihood. And the Gemara brings this as a proof. This is a proof for the idea of marchiki mitzudat hadag min hadag kamali ritzat hadag. What's going on here? Fishermen who cast nets and attract fish into their nets. Other fishermen who want to put nets down right next to them have to move the nets further away. You can't put your net next to somebody else's net. And they understand this to be a comparative halacha. And Tosafot explains why. What's the problem there? I'm a Rabbeinu Meir, number 6. Avishal Rabbeinu Tam. So Rabbeinu Meir, the father of Rabbeinu Tam, that's Rashi's son-in-law, okay, says the following. Demari bedag meis. Talking about dead fish. What's dead fish got to do with anything? You don't want to catch dead fish. No, that's not the point. You use dead fish as bait. Derech hadayagim. It was the way, it was the manner of the custom of fishermen. La'asimba b'tsudot dag mei. They used to put dead fish in the nets. The hadagim it asvim sham saviv. And it attracts the other fish. They all come to eat the fish. Fish don't have a problem eating other fish. Okay? Osada? Okay. The kevin shizeh perish mitsudoto tchila. And since this guy put out his nets first, the alide masen, through this investment, sha'asazeh mit asvim sham saviv, other fish come around. Vadai im haya chaveru poresh, if his neighbor put a net right next to him, who ke'ilu gozel, it's as if he's stealing law from him. For yachalamarin could say to him, tuchal asod zeh b'makom acher, go put your net somewhere else. Now, this is very interesting. Why is it ke'ilu gezel? Because who do the fish in the river belong to? Nobody. Hefka. They belong to everybody. So why can't the guy say, hey, these aren't your fish any more than anyone else's fish. I can put my nets wherever I like. Because I'm not taking the fish from your nets. That's your fish. I'm taking the fish from public ownership. You can't stop him. The answer is no, you can stop him. Because the first guy has invested and has established a gvul, a boundary, and therefore when the second guy comes along, he can't just piggyback on that investment, if you like, because he didn't put that money in, and he didn't put that time in. This is interesting, because this is a case where you don't need to come on to Gezel. This is not Gezel, because the fish don't actually yet belong to the person, but it is Ke'ilu Gezel, which may help us when it comes to copyright. And this principle was applied in the 1800s in the following case. The Chasam Sofer, whose name I just mentioned before, was approached by Rabbi Wolf Heidenheim. Rabbi Wolf Heidenheim produced what many people might fondly remember as the Rodelheim Siddur. The Rodelheim Siddur, which is still used in Yekesh Shuls, because time never moves in many places, and it's a nice Siddur anyway. The Rodelheim Siddur Machzer, which is, as I say, still used, was produced by Rabbi Wolf Heidenheim, and he put a lot of time and effort into producing the book. He researched the piyutim with all of their micro detail in a way that only a few people would, I'm sure, be that interested in, but nevertheless, it was produced as a first edition, and it was already sold out, and the profit had been made. And the question is, another Jewish publisher wanted to reprint the book and make money off a reprint of that book after Wolf Heidenheim had put all of the effort and research and time into it. And it went to the Chasam Sofer. Now, the Chasam Sofer was argued that it was not necessary to make a cherem here. Because Heidenheim had already made his profit. Why do we need a cherem for another 25 years, if you like, to stop anyone else making a profit on top of that? So the Chasam Sofer answers that the cherem is not enough. We need to come on to this concept we just mentioned. Look at number 7. In case, b'shal matfisim, when it comes to other printers, kol shekein b'misha hotza dvar chadash, certainly if they want to bring out something new, u'b'tanai shelo yeh chidushei Torah p'iske halacha, as long as it's not Torah and halacha, she'osa little tzchar v'lehanes mimen of olam hazeh, because you're not allowed to take profit and benefit from teaching Torah in this world, so maybe you're not allowed to make any profit from a sefer which just purely deals with Torah and halacha, which is an interesting question. I wonder if Al Shkor will agree with that. But and there are all sorts of different halachic issues today. Are you allowed to make profit? Are you allowed to take money from giving a shir like this? That's a good question. There are those poskim that will say no. Torah was given at Sinai to Moshe Rabbeinu free. Just like Torah was given free, Torah should always be given free. However, luckily for me, there is another principle, which is if you could be doing something else and you've given up that other opportunity in order to teach the Torah, then you can at least be reimbursed for what you would have otherwise got and have given up in order to give over the Torah. And since I used to be a commercial property lawyer in the City of London, I'm happy to say that at the point at which I begin to receive for my share giving the same that I would have received as a commercial real estate lawyer in London, I'm happy to stop charging at that point. But we haven't hit that yet, and it doesn't look as though it's happening anytime soon. So the Chasam Sofer says, of course, if you're bringing books of Torah, maybe that's different. Aval. If you're bringing out other things here, the Piyutim, and he's correcting the Talmim, etc., you're allowed to charge for that. And he says this, just like this big Chacham, this major Chacham, Wolf Heidenheimer, Shnoidelini Hagon Machane Lady, I know this person from other places. Kila Kama Zmanim Bahagata Piyutim, Ulatar Gemam. He put in so much time and effort into organizing these Piyutim and translating them into German, Balosh and Ashkenaz, and they're still there in the Siddur there, in the Sfas Emes, Rodelheim, with the German translation. Okay, but Ilmoli who, if not for him, says the Chasam Sofer, HaPiyutim Kfar Nishtaku, V'loi Nemru B'Doros Halalu Kiyadu. No one would say these Piyutim anymore if he hadn't preserved them. What a service he's done for the Jewish people. For who Taruch? He worked hard. The kibbutz kamas svarim lemeus. Okay, many, many svarim. Hanisrachim lezeh haesek b'hoitzi mamon rab. And he spent a lot of money on it. The lama yehenu b'mashiv matiu. Why should other people benefit from that effort and investment that he put in? The havelek ketsayet dagim. It's like the case of the fish, he says. Did he bring the case we said? Aliba de Rebbe Meir, Aviv shel Rebbe Nutan, just like we saw in Tosfos. The Perika Omer, Shehu Hatsayad Garam Kibbutz Hadegeli, he, this fisherman, has caused the fish to be in this place in the river, Val Korchach Yarchiku Shari Hatsayadim, and therefore the other fishermen have to make room, make way, Rocho Parsa, and leave a distance so that they're not piggybacking on that, Vahacha Nami Kitvase. This is the same case. So here's another example of where a legal principle, which is not Geneva, which is not Gazela, which is not theft, was invoked in order to, if you like, define the economic boundary of this person's investment, and this was used to protect the original Rodelheim Siddur, according to the Chasam Sofer. Yes?
What about the second edition? To make more money on the second edition? He's entitled to it.
Yeah, exactly, that's what he said. He's entitled not just to a first edition, but a second and a third. He put in that, it's exactly what he said. And therefore he imposed the chayrim, he said the chayrim stays for the 25-year term, and he's entitled to that. Now, another area is hezek. Hezek, what is hezek? Hezek is damage. Meaning, if you manage to damage somebody, to what extent are you liable for that damage? And we'll see an interesting discussion in Bava Kama right now. If I cause you damage, only very slightly, but I get a large amount of benefit, what's taken into account? The damage caused to you, or the benefit accrued to me? So let's have a look at number 8. Hadar b'chatzer, chaveru. Someone who squats. You say that in America? Squatters? Squatters, people who live in other people's property without permission. Hadar b'chatzer chaveru shaloi midato. Somebody who squats in somebody else's flat. They've entered their apartment or whatever, and they're living there without permission, without paying rent. Tzarech la'alot lo schar or ein tzarech? Do they have to pay rental or not? Are you allowed to, when you discover they've been living in your flat for 3 months, say, hey, you can't live in my flat for 3 months, you owe me X thousand dollars, or not? So says the Gemara, hey Chidami, what's the case here? If it's a flat that you don't normally rent out, meaning you didn't lose any rent because you don't rent it out. The gavra deloy avid lemiga, and it's a person squatting who has somewhere else to live. So he didn't benefit because he could have lived there, meaning you didn't lose and he didn't benefit. Zelu nene v'zelu chasa, so there's nothing to talk about. He never lost anything. He never gained anything. Of course you can't charge him rental. No, absolutely not. That's not the case. But if it's a property which is on the rental market and you've lost that rent, The gavra da'avid lemiga, and it's a person who needs somewhere to stay and he's gained that benefit, then of course you can charge him rent. Zenene, he's getting benefiting. Vazechaser, and the other guy's losing. That for sure you can charge. That they're easy cases. The Gemara wants to know the following case. It's an apartment which is not up for rental. So you didn't lose anything. But gavra da'avid miga, but he has nowhere else to go. So he gained. What's the halacha? Matzi amalei my chisratai. Why can't you say what did you lose? Meaning, why are you being so mean? You never lost anything. You weren't going to get rental anyway on this. So, and I got a benefit. Leave me be. Let me get a benefit. Why do you have to stop me from benefiting if you didn't lose out? Or Dilma matzi ama. Or maybe the other one can say no. Hayit hanet. You get benefit. Why should you get benefit for nothing? And that's the halachic issue of zenene. If you don't lose out, but other people benefit, can you stop them from benefiting? I was used to think this on the train. You know, when I used to get the train to work, and people are reading the paper like this, and there are other people looking over, looking at you reading the paper. And of course, it goes like the paper, you see the lesbian man, as if to say, I paid a dollar for my paper, why should you read my paper? You can get it. So you could say, Meaning, I'm not wearing out the prints on your newspaper by reading it. What's your problem? You can read it and I can read it. We can both benefit. Or do not say that. So, the Shulchan Aruch paskens this halacha as follows. And this you'll see is relevant to us. In number 9. Yesh omrim, because she'ein achatzer oimid leschar. If the property is not up for rental, so you're not losing out. De amrinan, de ein etzarech lehalot leschar. Then he can't make him pay rent. He can't make him pay rent because he didn't lose out. But the imchisru afilu davamuad. But the minute that the squatter causes the slightest damage, kagoin shahaya habayit chadash. Let's say the apartment was newly decorated. V'zechasru b'masha hishchiro, and he dirties it. He rubs against the wall. He makes it a bit ragged, a tatty. Afal pi she'ein hefset oisa shachruas elamuad. Even though he's only caused a very small amount of loss. Nevertheless, al yadav megalgalin alav kol haschar kefi mashenene. Once you cause even a tiny bit of loss, then we can already make a court case, and then we megalgal, we roll into that all the benefit that the other person accrued. So normally speaking, says the Shulchan Aruch, you can't be mean and say, why are you stopping him from benefiting? You didn't lose. But the second you lose, even a small amount, then that's already actionable, and you can make the guy pay not just what you lost, but everything that he gained and benefited as well. This is a practical question as well in Bein Adam L'Chavero. Can you cut through other people's buildings in order to save time? This used to be a shaila in Har Nof. I lived in Har Nof all the time. As you know, the way Har Nof worked, the buildings are all on different levels, and rather than walking all the way up the road to the staircase and coming all the way down the stairs and walking all the way back, just cut through number 42, you'll go in on the top floor, you'll come out on the bottom floor, and you save yourself 15 minutes. Is that allowed or is that not allowed? So obviously, to take the elevator, that's not allowed. That's clearly you're causing them loss. It costs money if all the public are using the elevator. And that's why in some of those buildings aren't hard enough. They can have an elevator which is disabled, can only be used by the people in the building for that reason. But what if you're not using the elevator? What if you're just walking down the steps or walking out of the door? Do we say, Zenene v'zelo chaser? Like, why should they stop me from walking down the steps? Or do we not? Right, so the Paiskim that I asked this question says, Avada, you cannot use the steps. Because every person who uses the steps causes damage, or they drop litter, the kids drop things on the floor, they rub against the walls. If 100 people a day use that staircase, it has an effect on the binyan. And people are mad, people are bothered about it. And therefore, I was always careful in Arnav not to use the steps, but people do use the steps, and I'm not sure all the Paiskim agree. But that's where this kind of shaila comes in, yes.
Can I just answer a practical
yes.
Yes. Now, you never use that
part.
Occasionally,
right. So I'm not a Paisik and I'm not paskining any shilas, certainly in this forum, but it sounds very similar to this.
In other words, the person who owns the parking spot
Right, right. Meaning, if it's all the time, meaning, I don't use the spot, I don't have a car, I don't know anyone that has a car, and I don't need it. So then maybe, why would you stop them from parking? But the minute you can say, look, you park there, every now and then people come to visit me and they can't park there. Isn't that very similar to the case we're talking about? It sounds like that. Again, I'm not a dayan and I don't pass kedini mamonos. But it sounds to me like it's a very similar situation. You can turn around and say, and the shaila would be then, now that you could take them to Beis Din for having blocked your place, can you charge them rental for all the time they parked there for the last 2 years? That, if you want me to represent you on that one, then I can, we can come to an arrangement. Okay, fine, good. So there are many combinations of permutations. People, when we were living in our building in Hanof, one of the people in our building put up a big sign saying, any car parked here will be towed away. That didn't deter anybody, because those signs are everywhere, and are effectively meaningless. But if you look in number 10, you'll see how the Noda B'Yehuda, Rav Chezkel Landau, in the 1800s, had the following case where he applied this principle of Hezek. In this case, there was a Talmud Chacham who wrote a commentary on the Talmud, and he arranged for a new edition of the Talmud to be brought out with his commentary. And he went to a printer, and the printer set up a beautiful new print of the Talmud with new blocks and his commentary as well, and printed this commentary, and that was put on the market. So then the printer was left with all of these blocks, which had been pre-prepared, and he said, you know what? I'm going to use these blocks, not the commentary, throw that one in the bin, okay? And I'm going to use the Talmud blocks and print a cheap Talmud without any of that commentary in, and undercut the guy, and then I'll be able to sell these because I've got all these blocks with a new brand Talmud printing for free. I don't want the commentary, I'll just print the Talmud. And the Noda B'Yehuda was asked this, and the Talmud Chacham took the printer to Beis Din, claiming that he'd lost money, and the Noda B'Yehuda said, absolutely, we're going to uphold that claim and say the following. Look at number 10. Amnon, Acha Yishuv, Nirish Echayim. He has to pay back. The printer who undercut him has to pay back. Shahari Gam, Bedar B'chatzeh Chaveru. Even in the case where you would live in somebody's apartment, Afilu Loi Kamel Igre, even if it's not up for rental, Im Chasra Afilu Dava Muet, if you cause loss even on the smallest amount, Megalgil and Alav Kol Aschar, then we can make you pay all of the benefit, all the rental, Kefi Shener, according to what you benefit, Kemavol B'Shulchan Aruch, B'Simen Shin Samach Gimel, as we've seen. V'Harizeh, Gam Kan Mechasra Harbe, and don't tell me you haven't damaged him. You've damaged him a lot. You've caused him, you've undercut his market. And again, this is very interesting because you haven't taken his physical property away, but you've taken away his opportunity, if you like, to sell more books. She'im loy haya Shimon Matfis Sedarim Halu, Shimon, who is the rival, if he hadn't have two Talmuds, have a shrichi or kafso zidni al sifreshel Reuven, people would have bought the other one. People would have bought the first one. She'afilu mishaloi haya kone perusha luchud. Even if people are not that interested in the commentary, not everybody's Talmudic commentary is of interest. Mikol makam abgishai tzarek l'shnei sedarim halalu. Since people needed the Talmud, lulmo mitochem, said to learn from it, okay, le Gemara, in perush Rashi, the Tosfos, etc. Haya moisif ezadava liknoisam. They would have added a bit extra to get this commentary. Why not? In perush shel Reuven. The achshav. But now Shemaz b'Shimon, now that Shimon is printing a rival without the commentary, Yisadarim halal shrichu bazal, v'loyim sukol kach b'reva koinim sheiknu b'Reuven. You won't find customers so easily. V'kevin shigorim b'Reuven hefsed v'zeh, since you are causing him loss, says the Noda B'Yehuda, megalgalin alav, this principle, you roll up into this kol mashenene, which can be a lot of money. All the profit that the other fellow made is now payable to you, the fichalkut misudahat, because you paid for those blocks to be made in the first place and he's caused you loss, etc. So there's another attempt to try and deal with this issue of intellectual property. Yes.
I'm undercutting other people by going on the internet and my book is cheaper than the other.
Good. So that's an interesting question. In the case of Hasagat Gvul, remember it was a mavoi. A mavui is a small area, meaning if I have a bakery in London, a kosher bakery, I can't turn around and say, look, I'm a kosher bakery in London, nobody else can open a kosher bakery in London, because there's a big market big enough to support more than one person. And that's called healthy competition. That's for sure. Therefore, Dafka, the case was a Amavi over there. Here, then there's going to have to be a question as to, are you causing loss, or is this just part of the market working? Meaning, everybody who opens up another club store is going to cause loss to somebody else. But they're not necessarily piggybacking on their investment. That's the point here, in that way. And therefore, every case is going to be different. It is going to depend on the economic realities. The halacha is trying to draw a careful balance between protecting people's interests in an interventionist way, if they've invested, but on the other hand, retaining an open market. We're not a communist society. We're not trying to just make, you know, everybody equal and some people more equal than others. So that's a balance, and it's going to be different balance depending on each case. We're just seeing ways that they're trying to work out some way to halachically define intellectual property if it's not geneva, because you're not stealing anything mamash. And here they tried hezek. Yes. But leather blocks are the first guy paid for.
Okay,
yeah, maybe. Maybe, because he would have been printing. If he would have invested his own time in preparing new letter blocks and printing his own Gemara, then fine. Then there's just two Gemaras on the market. But he used his, he damaged him using his money, etc. Now, the next example is actually fascinating. It's called Shi'ur B'mecher. And it goes like this. If I rent something to you, I can make conditions on the rental. Meaning, I can lend you my car, and I can say, I lend you my car on condition that you don't drive it on a Tuesday, because on a Tuesday, I don't know, I drive a taxi service and I don't want you on the roads on Tuesday, and if I find you're driving on the car on Tuesday, then I'm afraid I'll have to terminate the rental. That's fair enough. Every time you sign a lease on a house, you sign a lease on the conditions. You can take the house on condition A, B, C, D, E. The question is, if I sell you something, can I sell you something but impose conditions in the sale? I sell you this thing on condition that you only use it for these purposes. And the minute you abuse that condition, then you have to give it back and you can't have it anymore. Can I sell you my car on condition you never drive it on a Tuesday for the rest of your life? And I'm out there watching. And if I see you driving on a Tuesday, I'm going to take you to court to get my car back. Is that valid or not? It doesn't sound like the same thing as the rental case, does it? So the Gemara actually suggests that it can be valid. And the case is rather convoluted, and I'm not going into all of it now. It's number 11. It's a case, actually very interesting. It's the following case. If somebody, if you're a shomer for an animal, let's say somebody deposits an animal with you to look after, you're a shomer chinam. And a shomer chinam is not liable for things other than negligence. He's not liable if someone breaks in and steals it. So somebody gives you an animal worth, let's say, $100. And then it gets lost. So somebody breaks into the house and steals it. And it's not your responsibility. Someone gambled it and someone took it away. And when they catch the ganav, he'll have to pay $200. But now immediately the person comes to you and says, look, you're the shomer. I was entrusting it to you. And you say, yeah, but it was stolen and I'm not liable. So the Gemara of the Mishnah says you have a choice as the shomer. You can either say, go to court and say, I'm not liable because I'm a shomer chinam and I'm sorry, it's just bad mazel. Or you can say, well, 1 second, there's an investment opportunity here. If I pay him the $100, which I don't have to pay, but if I pay him the $100, and then they find the ganav, then the ganav has to pay the kefil to me. So I can risk $100 in the possible future expectation of finding the ganav and getting $200. That's a very nice return on investment. It's 100% return on investment in a few weeks. You won't get that in the banks around here. That's for sure. Who said you're going to get it? You might not get it at all. Okay? And therefore, I'm not in the investment markets, but it's a bit like futures. You're betting on prices going up and down and all sorts of things. So the Mishnah says you can do this.
Who gets the dog?
You get it. You pay for it. You pay for the dog. That's it. You get the dog, you get the kefil, you get the whole works. So the Gemara says this is valid, you can do this, and it's your risk. The Gemara has a problem with this, which is, and I'm not getting into all the technicalities, how can I buy in advance the kefil, the extra, the knas, the payment? It's something that doesn't exist yet. And you can't, it's something shalot bala olam, and you can't buy something that doesn't exist yet. And the Gemara gets into a whole discussion of how that works, and it concludes that actually it's as if you'd sold the dog to me retroactively, and it gets into a whole discussion about that. And in the end, the Gemara says, yeah, but if you've sold the animal retroactively, surely you should be able to keep the shearings and the animals that are born from it, and you can't keep that, etc. And they said no. And cutting a long story short, when we say that it's as if I bore the animal, it's excluding the rights to the shearing or the rights to future animals, etc. And the Gemara concludes, you can indeed sell something and exclude certain uses from that sale. And this is called shi'ur b'mecher. And therefore it could well be that when somebody sells you a book, they are selling you the book with the right to read the book, maybe to lend the book to a friend, but not to copy the book. And if you copy the book, you are abusing the conditions on which the book was sold to you. Look at Rav Moshe Feinstein, number 12. Go over to page 3. Misha ose tape, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, someone who makes a tape. Midivrei Torah, v'ose lahatika, and they put a prohibition on other people copying it. But davar echad she'asa tape midivrei Torah. Then it happens that someone made a tape of divrei Torah, a kaisev, and he writes on the sale, she'asa lasos tape shelo of tapes. Okay, you're not allowed to make more tapes. Vaday osa, says the Rav Moshe, it's for sure osa. Ki hu inyan shava kesev, it's worth money. Va'asa ha'tape, he'd made the tape l'harviach mizeh, to make profit. She'achem she'yirshu, and other people who want it, yitzdarchu l'shalem, they have to pay money, lot to him. She'im kein leikum ishum midastam, and if that's the case, it's not midastam, it's not me being mean. It's not me being mean, I've made this tape to make profit from it, and I've put a condition on the sale that if you buy my tape, it's sold to you on condition that you can't. You can't copy it. Umimela, he says, and it comes out. Kevan shehu cheftsai, since this right to not to copy is my right, ein rishayim likachato lishdamesh bo shelo b'rishus. You can't take this, you can't buy this tape and use it against my permission, which is interesting. And therefore you see, and I reproduced for you, which I think is, there's a certain irony in this, but I don't think Art Scroll would mind reproducing their prohibition on reproducing, okay? But I reproduce for you here the Art Scroll's wording when they put out their Svarim, and they write very clearly based on this idea of Shi'ur B'mecha, no part of this volume may be produced in any form, photocopy, electronic media, or otherwise, even for personal study or classroom use, without written permission from the copyright holder. Except by a reviewer who wishes to quote brief passages in connection with a view written for inclusion in magazines or newspapers. Notice is hereby given that the publication of this work involved extensive research and costs, and the rights of the copyright holder will be strictly enforced. And by the way, they do enforce their rights. And if you ask permission to copy the books, they often say no. Yes?
So what happens if he does it, and the next person got the tape, is he also...
Good. So that is where the thing comes unraveled. Which is, this is a contractual arrangement. And if Art Scroll sell the book to me, and I buy it on condition, then yes, I'm liable. But if I, the wholesaler, then sell the book to a retailer, and the retailer sells the book to you, the retailer couldn't care less whether you'd copy the book, and he didn't make any conditions on the sale. Why are you bound by a contractual arrangement that was made five levels up the chain between Art Scroll and the original purchaser? And that's why this is not so straightforward. In what way am I bound by this wording when I never agreed to it? Someone else agreed to it.
Except he's got the book and it's written inside and he makes a photocopy. He's photocopying the condition.
I understand, but I can't be bound by somebody else's agreement. If I sell my car to someone, say you can't drive it on Tuesday, and then that person sells the car to you and doesn't make any condition, can you drive it on Tuesday? No, why not? I never made any agreement. If they have a condition, keeping on going down, etc., unless you say this is implied in the condition of the sale each time round, it's complicated and it's not so straightforward that it works. And in fact, we'll see in a minute that the answer may be that Art Scroll can write whatever they like on here. It doesn't necessarily work in halacha. Because there is another approach. And this other approach is Dina de Malchus Adina. And I think this is perhaps the most important one in many ways. What is Dina de Malchus Adina? There is a principle in halacha that the law of the land is the law. Look at number 13. Ein poritzin loy mitevat hamoisim. You can't change money from the money, if you like, stores that are put together through tax collectors. You can't use tax collector money in order to change money. Why? Says Rashi, Lefisha Hein Shal Gezel. Because the tax collectors are Gazlanim. Okay? The Lo Mikish Shal Gabayim, and you can't use it from the Gabayim who come to collect all the stockers. The Ein Noitli Mehem Staka, and if people who collect this tax want to give the money to charity, because if you give to stocker, that will make it okay, you can't accept the money. So the Gemara has a problem with this. Moichin, tax collectors? You're telling me tax collectors are gadlanim? V'ha'ama Shmuel, second line number 13, doesn't Shmuel say dina de malchusa dina? Which Rashi uses to explain to mean v'zeh shekibul et ha-meches, the receiving this tax min ha-melech, it's from the king. But Dava cuts off in a certain specified amount, meaning it's a government authorized tax. Kach v'kach l'shana, so much per year. Ein gazlan, that's not gezel. If the tax collectors are working for the government in an authorized way, there's no gezel. So Amar Rav Chanina bar Kahana, Amar Shmuel, the meches she'ein bo kitzva. No, it's talking about a tax collector that does his own thing. It's not authorized. So it used to be a bit of a racket. Rashi explains, Ela noitel k'kol shechetzo, takes whatever he likes. And the Rabbi Yana omer b'meches ha'omid me'alav, or a self-appointed tax collector, which is not from the government. But Shmuel says, and the Shulchan Aruch passes in number 14, the dina de malchus dina. The official tax levied by the government is you're liable to pay it by law. They are not, that is not gezel. Number 14, Aval moiches shepasku ha'melech, says the Shulchan Aruch, if the government levy a tax, vitol davar kotzav, and they say, these are the rules, and it's a certain amount, and the Ramah adds, afilu tziva sheyisrael yiten yoter me'avodas kachavim. Even if it's a discriminatory tax, and the tax is that non-Jews pay 20%, but Jews pay 50%, nevertheless, mikol makom mikri davar kotzav lekolish. It's called something which is authorized, and the Jew has to pay. Behemid moiches yisrael agabos on the melech, and they appoint tax collectors to tax, the collectors of the government. But notice sha'adam zeh ne'eman, you know the tax collector is reliable. But einu moisi klum al mashe gozal melech, and he won't just take for himself. Einu becheskes gazlan. That is not called gezel. Mishum de dina, de malchusa dina. And the Shulchan Aruch paskins this, the law of the land is law. The law of the land, not only this, ele kashe amavrich mimeches zeh, if you try and escape from paying government taxes, you are either aloy sigzol, you are a gazlan, that is an issa doraisa, mipnei hu goizel, manas hamelech, you are stealing from the government's money, ben shehaya melech Yisrael, whether it's a Jewish king, ben shehaya melech oivet kachavim, whether it's a non-Jewish government. Meaning you can't steal from the government, says the Shulchan Aruch, because of dina de malchus dina. Fine. By the way, you should just know, and I put in number 15, just to cause trouble, there is a debate about Eretz Yisrael, as to whether the government in Eretz Yisrael also is able to use Dina de Malchus Adina. Because the Ram, although it's nothing to do with our topic for today, but it's important, the Ram says, what is the Svara, what is the logic behind Dina de Malchus Adina? Because the king has kindly, the government has kindly allowed you to live in their country. You live in their country under their conditions. And if you don't like those conditions, then you can leave and live in somebody else's country. That's why you have to stick by those conditions. You live there, subject to that. Says the Rambam, Eretz Yisrael, every Jew in the world has a halachic right to live in Eretz Yisrael, and nobody can throw me out. And therefore, I don't live here by virtue of the kindness of the government. I live here because, lahalacha, I'm allowed to live here. And therefore, Dina Malchus Adina doesn't apply in Israel. That doesn't mean you don't have to pay tax in Israel, although that is part of the debate that comes up. There are other issues as well, and I'm not getting into that now, but you should just know that this Ran is wheeled out to say, oh, but in Israel it's not the case. So what does Dina Malchus Adina do for our case? It's not just tax. Any time the government imposes laws that regulate the financial benefit of the people, or civil or legal issues, those are binding on people. Meaning, what speed am I allowed to drive on the roads, lahalocha? Dina Malchus Adina. Get a beautiful compliment here as well. It's alright, you know. It's not always clear who anything belongs to. It stopped now anyway. Dina Malchus Adina applies to everything, not just to the taxes. Meaning the where I can park is Dina Malchus Adina, and copyright law too. And therefore, there was a major case in the 1850s in which somebody brought out a new copy of the Shulchan Aruch with Pitzchei Tshuva, which was a new parish at the time, and somebody took them to court and said, took the basin and said, I have exclusive rights to bring out the Pitzchei Tshuva, and you can't, the Pitzchei Tshuva sold them to me, and you can't bring out your copy. And he went between different people, and one of the most important things to come out of this is as follows. There was a rav called the Shoel Omeshiv, Rav Yosef Nathanson of Lemberg, who said the following. Actually, Dina Malchus Adina is not relevant. Why? Because it's not possible that there can be a system of copyright law, of
of intellectual property in the non-Jewish world, and such a thing doesn't exist in halacha. It's not possible that the law for Jews can be more lenient in these areas, less ethical, less moral, if you like, than the law for non-Jews. Meaning, if the non-Jewish world has developed a concept of intellectual property, says the Sholem Eishiv, that must be geneva in halacha as well. Rav Yitzchak Shmelkes at the time disagreed absolutely and said, no, there is no concept of intellectual property in halacha, and therefore we go back to dina d'malchusa dina. And therefore this becomes in many ways the defining debate in the 21st century as well. When I'm doing something which is legal under American law, or legal under Israeli law, does the halacha come along and say, yes, but that's not legal under halacha? Or do we turn around and say, no, the halacha doesn't really have any system of intellectual property, and if it's legal for you to do it, then it's okay. And different poskim will say, these are really the answers I've got in different ways. Meaning, according to Dina Malchusa Dina, and many poskim, my poskim go this way, or some of them anyway as well, if you can establish that what you're doing right now is legal under the jurisdiction that you're in civil law, then halacha will say that's okay. And there are other poskim that will say, no, it is geneva. You are not allowed to take other people's things, and there are halachic rules that go above and beyond Dina Malchusa Dina. And really, that's what you're going to have to deal with. And Dina Malchusa Dina is not so easy to work out. Am I allowed to copy parts of books for personal use, or to lend to somebody else, or to create shiurim, if I'm not making money out of it? And the law on this is not simple. For example, in America, there is a fair use concept, which will allow people to copy certain other works, even if they are expressed to be subject to copyright, as long as I'm not making money, as long as I'm not taking substantial parts, and there are rules that the courts have developed in order to decide this. Meaning maybe Art Scroll can put whatever they like. For American law, I'm allowed to copy this Art Scroll book. Maybe that is acceptable in halacha as well under the Malchus Dina, or according to other poskim, no, maybe it goes beyond that. And it's not always easy to work out which law you're under. I'm sitting in Israel downloading something from the internet. Am I subject to Israeli law? My internet provider might be based in Sweden, and the person who uploaded it is living in America. Which law do I even use? Which system? And it's really, you go speak to lawyers and they say it's complicated. Okay? And if you if you pay me, then I'll write you an analysis of that. So Dina Malchusa Dina sounds like a useful tool, but actually it's not like just driving at the speed limit. It's actually much more complicated than that, and under certain circumstances things will be allowed. For example, I've been told by Poskim that you can certainly copy a CD for your own personal private use. If you buy a CD in a shop and you want to have one in the kitchen and one in the car, fine. So you can copy the CD and you can use that, because they don't expect you to buy two or three, and that's not illegal under Israeli law. However, I can't obviously get 20 people each put a dollar in and then buy one CD, copy it 20 times and give it to all my friends. That's almost certainly illegal under Israeli or American law, and therefore one has to get into this kind of analysis, and it's not always straightforward. There's another question, of course, which is, if you save geneva, then are you allowed to benefit from it? You're not allowed to use or benefit from geneva. Just turn over the page for a second and look at the last couple of sources. In number 17, says the Shulchan Aruch, Asa liknoit mehaganav hachefet sheginev, or ganav, rather. You're not allowed to buy from the thief that which the thief stole. Va'avon gadolhu, and that is a very serious avera. Shehari machzik yidei ovri avera, because you're encouraging people to steal. V'gorim lo lignov ginevos acharos, you're encouraging them to steal even more. She'im lo yimtza lokeach ha'ein ha'gomev, if there's no one to buy it, they won't steal it. So if people illegally upload movies to the internet and I want to download them, am I encouraging more and more of this? Are people macpid on this? Are they bothered about it? Does it depend on how old the movie is? There were sites, and there are sites that have been closed down by people. Napster, remember Napster? There was a whole music uploading site that was closed down. Some people are bothered about this. Or do we turn around and say, look, once something is on the internet, it's what we call an aveda midat. It's like if you leave your property open in the street and you don't bother locking it up. You can't complain if other people take it. Maybe the internet is one big open Rishus HaRabim, and once you put stuff on there, then you're naive to think that it's going to stay where it stays. It's going to move all over the place. Do we say that? Do we not say that? And these are all shilas that come up in terms of using stuff that has been downloaded, pirated copies of this and that and the other. So where does that leave us? It leaves us with a complex situation. There definitely are halachas relating to copyright situations. There's no question. Whether it's Hasagat Gvul, whether it's an issue of Nezek, whether it's an issue of Minhag, we didn't see that source, but there are sources that say that each industry can establish its own rules to establish, to determine what is acceptable and unacceptable. There are examples in the Gemara of that. Or is it just straight deal of the Machos Tadine, in which case you better get yourself a good lawyer and know what is and what isn't legal in the country that you're in or whichever system that you're working under, and maybe that will be okay. But one way or the other, we are trying hard to make it work, and this can be big money for people if people have their livelihood undercut by those who are copying their stuff. That can be big money, and definitely it's asur in a way which would cause serious damage to people, but each case is taken on its own and needs to be thought about further. That's what I wish to say about Geneva for today. Next week and the week after, if you recall, I'm not here. I'm going to be in the States and in Canada. Be'ezrat Hashem, 3 weeks from today, I will be back. And we have a few more to run before we finish with Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. I'm aiming to keep going till Purim, Be'ezrat Hashem. And by that time, I might have run out of things to say. So we'll have to talk about something else instead. Have a wonderful day.